Jude, thank you very much for reading that. Our title today is Why Trust the Bible? Weighing up the historical evidence, the historical reliability of the Bible, the evidence for Jesus. There's a popular idea, a rumor, that the Bible doesn't tell the truth about Jesus. A lot of people have the idea that there is the Jesus of the Bible, the Jesus of Christianity, but that version of Jesus has been invented or exaggerated by the Christian church, and that before that there was a different Jesus, the Jesus of history, the real Jesus, and he might have been very different if he existed at all. Now, every now and then we see a news headline about it, or a new TV program with an exciting new discovery, some document that has been found that puts everything in a different light and challenges what the church believes about Jesus. So, for example, there was a Channel 4 documentary called Jesus, the Evidence, presented by an impressive looking person with lots of letters after his name. He had a kind of German accent, which I find always is persuasive and convincing for me. Behind him in his library, lots of books that he's clearly read. Obviously a clever person, saying Jesus might never have existed. But what you probably wouldn't realize if you watch that TV program is that the person speaking was actually G.A. Wells, who is a professor of German at Birkbeck, London. So yes, he's a professor, but he's a professor of German. He doesn't have any qualifications or background knowledge in something like biblical studies or history. And in fact, his idea that Jesus might never have existed is a sort of pet theory, a bit of a conspiracy theory that he likes to talk about. It's just a kind of hobby that he has in his spare time. But no actual historians take it seriously at all. They think it's all a bit silly. It's like having a TV program saying that black holes are not real, after all, and having it presented by a professor of music, and then having their musical qualifications listed after them. And this sort of thing happens all the time. Here are some bestsellers that are very popular at the moment that I've read myself. The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, Zealot, The Life of Times of Jesus of Nazareth by Reza Aslan. All of them, when they were published, very quickly discredited by professional historians who work in that field. And there are a lot of people studying that period of history in universities around the world. Of course, they don't all believe in God. Many historians don't believe in God, some do. But there are lots of things they do agree about, and they do agree that that these books aren't giving you an accurate picture, and that we do have a lot of reliable information about Jesus in the Bible. You might hear exciting new gospels have been discovered. Well, they were found in 1945, it was very easy for historians to see that they were late forgeries written a long time after the time of Jesus and his followers. There's no serious doubt about that. Nobody really looks to those as ways of finding out about Jesus Christ. But you don't need to be a historian. You don't need to be an expert to see why the Bible is reliable. You just need to take a close look at it yourself. Now, in the time we've got this morning, I can only summarize very quickly four reasons to believe that the Bible gives us good evidence about Jesus. But if you want to see where I'm getting all that information from, and you want to look at the references and the diagrams, and you want a bit more information, or find out other things that you could read to investigate a bit more fully, I've printed out a sort of fuller version of what I'm about to say. And there'll be copies of this at the back at the end where you picked up your Bible from. So feel free to look into it later. But I'm just going to give a quick summary. Why trust the Bible's evidence for Jesus? Well, I'm going to give you four reasons for that. And the first is that they were independent eyewitnesses. The Bible includes documents written by independent eyewitnesses. There are 27 documents from that first generation of believers in the first century. Some of them tell us that they met Jesus and spoke with him and saw him and knew him well. Here are some examples of what they say about themselves. John writes, "We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, Paul says he appeared, talking about Jesus after he rose from the dead, Paul says he appeared to me also. Peter says we were eyewitnesses. That was one of our readings this morning where Peter explains that he wasn't following cleverly invented stories, that he was an eyewitness, that he was there for the things that he describes. Here's a quick sort of diagram. On the left there, you've got those three witnesses, John, Paul and Peter, who saw and heard and met Jesus. On the right, you've got the documents that we have in the Bible from them, John's account and his letters, Paul's letters and Peter's letters. But there are other things in the Bible that come from eyewitnesses too. So we read this from Luke. Luke didn't meet Jesus before his death, but did meet and did travel with the people who knew Jesus. Just as he talks about the events to do with Jesus and how he has recorded them, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Notice that phrase, from the first. In other words, people who knew Jesus from the very beginning of his work and who were with him right the way through to the very end of the story. Those people were treated very seriously. You can tell that from the way the New Testament is written, that their information comes from those people. People who were there from the first and right through. And Luke is saying that he has gathered together their information. And in fact, he is always mentioning their names as he goes along and telling us who they were. So we can add to the diagram not just John, Paul and Peter who write for themselves in the Bible, but also lots of other witnesses. Their information has been collected together by people who knew them and heard what they had to say, by Mark, Luke, Matthew. Matthew probably was one of the people who knew Jesus. He doesn't tell us that, but certainly he's telling us what eyewitnesses were describing. So, what is good about this is we've got independent witnesses. We're not just relying on one person's version of events. You could really help, I think, and get some sort of, can be help, it would help to convince you if you were to read through John's Gospel and read through Mark's Gospel, for example, and just compare them. You will very quickly see that they are describing the same Jesus Christ, who did the same sorts of things and believed and said the same sorts of things. And they both reached the same conclusions about who Jesus was and what he meant and what he did. But you can also see straight away that they're writing from a very different perspective. They have seen different things. They describe them in their own style and in a very different way. They weren't there for all of the same events. Sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't. And you get two independent eyewitness accounts. Just to give you an example. Mark tells us the names of three women who went to the tomb of Jesus and found that it was empty. But John only mentions one woman and tells us her name. And that is the woman who, he says, came to speak to him and came to tell him the news. Now, it's not hard to imagine how Mark might have met three women and heard from them. Perhaps he was part of that same church community or visited that church and heard what they had to say about what happened on that day. And then to imagine that John is telling us that his personal experience, which was one of them coming to speak to him, he didn't know the names of the others. Perhaps he knew there were other women, but he didn't know who they were. That is quite plausible. But do you see what's happened there? What we're looking at isn't a kind of finished summary. This is not the church writing sort of 50, 100 years later, giving the kind of official version. You know, you might read a history of the Second World War and it will give you an official version of events. Well, that's not what you've got. You've got the first eyewitnesses telling you their personal perspective. And no one has tried to kind of iron out anything that might appear inconsistent at first. No one's tried to make it tidy or neat. This isn't a sort of authorized official thing that has been written by church leaders. This is the eyewitnesses speaking for themselves. And as always, when you have eyewitnesses, there are puzzles that you have to try to fit together. Now, they can be fitted together. There are no contradictions that can't be reconciled. Lots of people have done that. But the writer hasn't done that for us. He's left us to do that. He's given us the raw, original, unedited witness statements. To give you an analogy, You're not, imagine a criminal case in a court of law. You're not hearing the judge's summary of events at the end. You're not hearing what the judge has decided has happened. What you're hearing is the witness statements by the people who were there as they were interviewed by the police and wrote down their own perspective. That's what we've got in the New Testament. Independent eyewitness accounts. And then secondly, it was written down in their lifetime. Some people say, well, maybe it was a bit like Chinese whispers. Apologies to anybody who speaks the Chinese language. I don't know what they call that game in China. Maybe they call it English whispers. I'm sure English is very hard to understand if you're not English. But anyway, in this country, we call it Chinese whispers. I think in America, they call it the telephone game, which is perhaps better. But it goes a bit like this. You imagine that I go over to Neil and I whisper in his ear. I'm only allowed to say it once. I whisper a message. I might say, for example, Jesus is a good human teacher who's only interested in helping you to be a better person. And then Neil has to whisper that to Lucy, and Lucy whispers it to Mark, and Mark whispers it to Agnes, and so it goes on all the way around the room until we get to Michael at that end. And then we ask Michael, what did he hear? And he tells us that what he heard was that Jesus was God in human form, come to die for us and rise again because we all need to be forgiven. And you might say, well, somewhere along the line, the message has got a bit muddled up. And people say, well, it's a bit like that. That's what happened with the Bible. But if you read the Bible, you can see that it was nothing like that. Nothing like that for three reasons. Firstly, there was no chain. Luke heard it from people who were there. Many of them wrote it for themselves. And Luke and the others heard it from the people who were there themselves. So instead of me going to Neil to tell him about Jesus, it would be me going to Michael to tell him about Jesus and skipping out the rest of you and Michael telling us what he thought I'd said. Secondly, there wasn't enough time for it to get confused and muddled up. Jesus died, we think, in AD 33. The first documents in the New Testament were written only a few decades later. There are arguments about when books of the Bible were written, but some of them we're sure about. And even the ones we're not sure about, well, the difference is not that many years. A lot of people think that the Gospels can't have been written before AD 70. Because Jesus seemed to know in advance what was going to happen in AD 70. Well, if you don't believe in Jesus, then you have to rule out the possibility that he could have known anything in advance. So you have to say it was written at AD 70. But usually they won't go much later than that, because you can tell from the way the New Testament was written that it sounds like a very early document. They seem to know the area really well. So, you know, almost any page of your Bible, you'll see little clues that match up with what we know from archaeology or history. For example, John mentions that there is a pool in Bethesda that has five colonnades. And in 1888, some archaeologists dug up Bethesda, and they found this pool, and they found the five colonnades matching John's description. You find things like that on almost every page of the Bible. So historians have to say, well, this was written by the people who lived at that time in that place. It's hard to question that. And it's only a question of whether it was written sort of 20 years after, or 30 years after, or 40 years after. It's that kind of disagreement that we're dealing with. So it was in their lifetime that these things were written down. So there's not enough time for the message to get radically changed and confused and muddled up. And then thirdly, it's not like Chinese whispers. Thirdly, because the message wasn't, you know, in Chinese whispers, you're only allowed to say it once. You have to say it quietly. In the first century, people were saying this again and again and again, and they were saying it as loudly as possible. And the early Christians, you can see from what they've written, that for them, the final source of authority was the eyewitnesses, the people who had met Jesus and traveled with him. The 12 were made leaders of the church, and everyone wanted to hear what they had to say. And as they told that story and retold that story again and again and again, Sunday by Sunday around the world, there were people in the room. So Peter might stand up, let's say, and talk about how Jesus healed some blind men while he was walking along the road. And he mentions the town that they were approaching. And someone at the back puts their hand up and says, yes, that I know that guy. He's my next door neighbour. He's always talking about that. His name's Bartimaeus. And Mark thinks, oh, great, Bartimaeus. Well, I'll include that in my gospel. I don't know who the other blind man was, but I know it was Bartimaeus. You can see that kind of thing going on all through the accounts of Jesus. And fourthly, it wasn't like Chinese whispers, because these things were really memorable. If you believe you've seen Jesus come alive again, if you believe you've seen miracles, if you believe you've met someone who claims to be God, you remember that. Most of us, if we're married, we can tell you quite a bit about our wedding day. Probably our children will still be able to tell you quite a bit about our wedding day, because they will have heard that story told so often, and they will have heard their parents kind of correct each other on little details or add extra information. That's the kind of first-hand information we've got in the Bible. So they were independent eyewitnesses. It was written down in their lifetime. There were too many copies to change. So people say, well, okay, maybe they wrote it down, but then maybe the church changed it later on. Maybe they took the Bible and fixed it and changed it and made it, maybe the Roman Empire or the Pope or the early church turned it into the message that they believed rather than the message that the first witnesses were describing. But we need to realize the Bible spread very quickly. It was being copied and translated all around the world within a generation. And there was no one who would be in a position to go to all of those places and change all of those copies in the Bible. The only people who really could control what was in the Bible were the 12 eyewitnesses that led the church at the very beginning. The message could only really have been controlled when it first went out by those who first announced it. After that, it was being copied and spread around the world. Now, later on, the Roman Empire did become sort of Christian-ish and did try to control and centralize Christianity, but that was only in the 4th century. By that time, there were already lots of copies of the Bible all around the world. And many of those still survive today, and we still have them in museums. So here's the very oldest fragment or scrap that we have with writing on both sides. It mentions Pilate. You can tell from the words which part of John's gospel it is from. It's been dated to about AD 120, so very early. It's held in the John Rylands Museum in Manchester. You can go and look at it if you want to. This is one of the earliest complete copies of the Gospels. This is in the British Museum in London, and it's dated to about AD 200. Now, there is some truth to what people are saying about the Bible having been changed. Yes, that is true. When people copy something, they do make mistakes, and sometimes it looks a little as if someone has deliberately tried to change the Bible. But we have so many different copies around the world that it isn't hard for historians to work out what the original said with a fair amount of confidence. Historians do that with all ancient documents. It's called textual criticism, and they are confident that the Bible we have today in our modern Bibles is almost exactly the same as what was written at the time. There are a few things that you can't be sure about. If you have a good translation, there'll be a little footnote, and at the bottom of the page, it'll tell you that there's maybe a word or two here or there on the page that we can't be sure about. But nothing that would really change any important aspect of Christian belief. Just a question of how many coins were used to buy something, that kind of issue. Historians are sure that the modern Bibles have got it right for two reasons. Firstly, the large number of early manuscripts. So we think we know quite a lot about Plato and Homer and Caesar and Sophocles, but that information comes from a limited number of documents. We've got 7 copies of a document about Plato. Homer, we have 643, which is a lot. For the New Testament, we have over 5,000 copies of ancient manuscripts of the New Testament. If you include translations into other languages, there are about 24,000 of them. And secondly, there's the closeness in time to the original. A little diagram here. You won't be able to read it, but you can get the idea. The gap between the time of writing and the oldest surviving copies, you can probably see there's 4 kind of bands of colour, and they represent the number of years from when it was written to the first copy that you can find in a museum today. And I just want to, those are 4 documents that are trusted from about the same period. as the New Testament. I'm just going to put up the band of colour for the New Testament to compare it to that. There it is at the bottom, just a tiny, tiny gap by comparison. Well, you can look up this information in the handout at the back and read the chart and see how that has been worked out. But let me just tell you how it's been summarised. The interval then between the dates of original composition and the earliest extant evidence becomes so small as to be in fact negligible, and the last foundation for any doubt that the scriptures have come down to us substantially as they were written has been removed. And that's from Sir Frederick Kenyon, who's a former director and principal librarian of the British Museum. So don't believe it when people tell you that the Bible has been changed and it's not the same as when it was first written. There were independent eyewitnesses. It was written down in their lifetime. There were too many copies to change. And then, just briefly, they believed what they were saying. We do have a lot of evidence from people who didn't believe in Christianity. There are quite a few documents from the first few centuries that tell us about Jesus. Without opening a Bible, you can find out when and where Jesus lived. You can find out he was an influential teacher, that he did things that seemed supernatural. You can find out who executed him and when, that people claimed to have seen him rise from the dead, that his younger brother James and other early Christians were put to death. You can find all of that out without looking in a Bible. But the people who write that stuff don't tell us very much about it, because they hadn't been convinced and they weren't very interested. If you want to really understand cricket, don't talk to me, talk to Helen Wilson. She loves cricket. If you want to understand birds, talk to Bartow. I don't know anything about birds. He knows all about birds. If you want to know about Marvel superheroes, I'd be a good person to ask about that. Ask the person who has a passion, an enthusiasm, who has been won over. And that's the best way to work out whether it's a good thing or not, and whether it's true or not. So it is helpful that we have accounts written by people who had been convinced that these things were true. History is always going to be biased. Everyone's got a point of view. And what matters is that you know what their point of view is, and you take that into account. Well, Jesus taught his followers to be honest, and the writers of the Bible seem to be honest. You get the, Peter tells us his story of Jesus. You get the impression Peter was a bit of an idiot. Never seemed to understand anything. Bit of a coward. Ran away at the vital moment, pretended he'd never met Jesus. He doesn't sound like he's really selling himself as a great candidate for leader of the early church. It looks much more like he is someone who has been won over by Jesus and thinks it's important to be honest. And secondly, they were willing to die for what they were saying. They knew what happened to Jesus. Same thing happened to many of them. If they had been making it up, if they had been exaggerating it, they wouldn't have been willing to go ahead and be killed for it. And here's why they wrote. They make their aim very clear. This is from John, one of the eyewitnesses. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in these books. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. Well, that is a very important question for any of us here. It makes it very worthwhile for us to take a close look at the words of Jesus. That's what we do here, Sunday by Sunday. We love to help with that, to take a close look at Jesus, because by believing in him, we found that we can have life in his name. So it is worth understanding and weighing up and looking into. Well, there is time for some questions, and I'd love to hear what you've come up with. Please feel free to wave at me and ask a question if you'd like to do that. That's fine. We put cards down there on the chairs. If you haven't already, you could write a question on the card. I'm going to ask Nadia and Michael if they would mind just wandering around so you can give them a card. I'll just give you a moment or two. Talk to the person next to you if you want to. See if you can come up with a question that might be helpful to ask. terrible question from Nick. If you were to ask a Jewish person about their Bible that they read and understand, would it be any different from the one we have? Okay, thank you. I'm going to start answering the questions now, but feel free to carry on writing them as we go. How do we know witnesses were really independent? Might they have met and agreed upon their stories? Well, I mean, to some extent, I would say they have met and agreed on their stories in that the people who saw all these different things are part of a community that starts in Jerusalem and spreads out across the known world in the first century. So they are hearing what each other is saying about this. Thank you. And I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I think that means that their information has to be tested. If I'm describing a movie that I've seen, and someone else in the room has also seen the movie, and I know that if I get something wrong, they will correct me and put me straight. So there's something helpful about having that period of time where they're all hearing each other's evidence and getting it all straight. But what you can tell is that they haven't copied each other. John certainly hasn't copied. I mean, it's complicated. You have to use this. This is why I gave you this diagram, if I can find it again, because you can tell that John, Paul, and Peter, the information we have that comes from them, hasn't been copied from each other. If it had been, they would have been a little bit more careful to make it all line up more neatly. You know, so these days you have a debate about whether the Bible contradicts each other. John says there was only one woman at the tomb, and Mark says there are three women at the tomb, so that's a contradiction. And you know, that isn't really the case. You look at it more closely, and you see that even John seems to realise that there were other women there. He just doesn't know their names. But I think if they had got together to agree a story, it would have been neater, and they would have made it match up more closely. So it looks very much like independent witnesses. Wow, there's a lot of questions. We're not going to do them all. There was a gospel not included, maybe Thomas. That's in brackets. How did they decide what books made up the Bible we have? Well, I think the answer to that is they included all the books of the Bible that were written by eyewitnesses or by people who were getting their information from eyewitnesses. So there is something called the Gospel of Thomas. It's one of those books I mentioned that was found in 1945 in some caves, along with something called the Gospel of Peter and the Gospel of Mary. There was a group of people who didn't believe Christianity, but who kind of wanted to hijack Christianity, and so they would do like forgeries, and they would pick names like Thomas or Mary or Peter. Because, you know, if it turns out that Thomas or Mary or Peter actually weren't Christians, they believe what we believe, you know, 150 years later, then that helps our cause. So they're fakes and they're forgeries, and it's easy to tell that. It's a bit like finding someone sharing on Facebook a letter allegedly written by Winston Churchill saying that Brexit is an excellent idea, or saying that Brexit is a terrible idea. You just know from the word Brexit that it wasn't really written by Winston Churchill. And you can kind of see why they've done that. Well, it's like that with things like the Gospel of Mary and the Gospel of Peter. The Gospel of Thomas does have some sayings in it of Jesus, which are very similar to the ones in the Gospels. Probably they were just copied from the Gospels. It is possible that Thomas had come across, that whoever wrote the Gospel of Thomas had access to some other document that has now been lost. But that's as close as it gets to giving us information. And so it's not really that the church chose what to put in the Bible. It's that the early eyewitness documents kind of formed the church and were kept by the church. It was only when the Emperor of Rome decided that it needs to be a bit more organized and a bit less messy that you actually have something like a contents page that's agreed all around the world. But that isn't really the important part. The important part is what happens in the first century when the eyewitnesses write down the Bible and people become Christians as a result of that. How do we know witnesses were... Oh, I think we've done that one. Yes, we've done that one. I've done that one. Does it count much that Julius Caesar wrote his own documents, making a zero time of transmission to readers? I'm not sure I fully understand the question. Maybe if that's your question, come and ask me at the end. Probably some other people here do get it, but I don't. Sorry. Come and ask me that question at the end. and I'll give it a bit more thought. Yeah. I mean, I think what is interesting about Julius Caesar is that at school you're taught about Julius Caesar, and no one says to you Julius Caesar might not have existed. But we have much less evidence, far fewer documents, about that than we do about Jesus. Because I think Jesus was felt to be so important and life-changing by so many people, all around the world at an early time. And so we've just got a lot more evidence available to look at. Were there other non-Bible ancient manuscript documents that mention Jesus, his disciples, or events of Jesus's, or his speeches or miracles? Yes, there were other non-Bible ancient manuscript documents that mentioned Jesus. I've listed some of them in this leaflet. I'll put this at the back. They don't tend to say a lot because they don't. For them, Jesus is not really very important. They're not Christians, so the Gospels tell us much more. But what they do say matches well with what we can read about in the Gospels by the people who were persuaded. But anyways, there are more details in the leaflet. How are we doing? I'm going to do one more. Who decided which accounts letters to include in the Bible? I think we talked about that one just now. So hopefully I've covered that. Can you name a couple of archaeological incidents that relate to the Bible? Gosh, this is like a very demanding quiz show. The only one I remembered enough to include in the talk is the one I mentioned from John chapter 5 about the colonnades. I'll give you something that is similar, though, which I quite like. Apparently somebody has counted up the number of times that names are mentioned from that place and from that time, and found 2,953 examples of names being mentioned outside the Bible from the same time period and from the same location. And they've compared that list of names with a list of names that are mentioned in the Bible, and they found a very close match. They found that the names that are most popular in society generally were the same names that are most popular in the biblical documents, and it's a very close match. But if you imagine the Bible being written a bit later or in a different part of the world, and you make a list of names for that part of the world, even Jewish names, the list ends up being very different from the names that are mentioned in the Bible. So the Bible clearly was written by people who lived there at that time and in that place. And the names don't appear to be made up names. They appear to be authentic names. Okay, I don't know whether that's not really a good note to end on, but it's the one we're going to end on. Perhaps what I'll do is just read that sentence from the Bible. These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name.